Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a Dhamma talk from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. If you find benefit from this talk, please support the restoration, the preservation, and the presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma with your donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So this morning's talk is on the Kajaniya Sutta. You'll see how this follows the previous 19 classes. And I think we have 7 classes left in this structured study. And you'll see that most of these concluding classes describe Dhamma practice, how it is the practical application of what we've been learning, what it looks like, how to maintain it. And this, the Kajaniya Sutta, you'll see, is directly related to what the Buddha describes as the ongoing personal experience of suffering, known as the 5 clinging aggregates. This follows what the last week's class on karma. And we learned last week that karma is what's arising right here, right now. Karma is the present moment unfolding of past intentional acts moderated by present level of mindfulness, meaning what we hold in mind will determine the experience of our conditioned thinking. And I got a similar question from 2 online students, so I want to clarify something about karma. Excuse me. The difficulty with understanding the Buddha's simple description of karma is because of our conditioned views, and that we believe that karma is in some way an outside agent working on us. Usually it's perceived as a grand universal system of behavior modification through reward and punishment. That is the common belief. That's a common belief in religion, by the way. Violating the 10 commandments could be seen as creating a type of Christian karma. We just use a different word for that type of poor behavior. Of course, there, in the Buddha's understanding is that there's no outside agent working on us. Karma is what I just described, and it's the result of a conditioned mind, a mind conditioned towards maintaining ignorance. And so it's that ignorance that keeps emerging that is reacted to by that mind rooted in ignorance that creates what we call karma. Of course, we are in complete control over that. We cease ignorance, we cease karma. There's no outside agency working on us. We are in complete control of how we live our lives. After we get past what the Buddha describes as having a human life, birth, sickness, aging, and death, not getting what we want, getting what we don't want. That's all part of suffering that the Buddha describes in that sequence as saying, in short, the 5 clinging aggregates are suffering, are dukkha. The 5 clinging aggregates are form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, and consciousness, meaning ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance of 4 noble truths. I'm teaching just to the computer. I don't teach to everyone. And again, so just notice how direct this teaching is, and it tells us line by line. When distraction and stress arise, this is what you do. On one occasion, the Buddha was staying in Savatthi. There he addressed those gathered. Friends, any Dhamma practitioner who directs their thinking to past lives are only recollecting one or all of the 5 clinging aggregates. So right off the bat, the Buddha's addressing a common problem within his students of the time, meaning getting into fabricated and magical and mystical beliefs of past lives somehow manifesting in the future, that is manifesting in the present, driving the future. Immediately the Buddha says that's all speculation, it's rooted in ignorance. Do not look at past lives, and you'll see, do not look at future lives either. And this immediately puts the lie to something that was very common during the Buddha's time and is just as common today. I can remember being in a few famous monasteries being told that you'll know your awakening when you can recollect past lives. And that teaching comes from the Abhidhamma, which we know the Buddha didn't write. And that's usually the qualification, where there's so many suttas where the Buddha says, anytime you start thinking about past lives or future lives, stop it, because it's a fabrication. It can only cause stress and suffering. The Buddha's Dhamma is about living a human life right here and right now. It's the most powerful teaching on the power of now. I'm not putting another person's teaching down. This is what the Buddha discovered. How to do that. How to develop a presence in our life as our life unfolds and keep that there. Keep that presence of mind. That's refined mindfulness. The Buddha continues. Which five? When recollecting, I was one with such a form in the past, one is only recollecting form. And we know that form is one aspect, the self-identification with the physical body. And so when I'm thinking about, and I used to do this, I studied with some of the great, what do they call them, soul retrieval experts. Michael Harner and Sandra Ingerman come to mind, but there are a few other ones that I can't remember right now. And of course, think about that. The emphasis was going back into past lives, identifying a soul that I think is mine. Of course, this is all in my imagination. And now incorporating that fabricated belief into a belief that is now driving this life. And when I went through this process, it was amazing, all the lives that I could recollect. And of course, they're all in my imagination. None of them were true. And even if they were actually true, it wasn't true to me. I was making it all up. So at the very best, that type of thinking is imagining something that you've already fabricated. So the point that I'm making is that we can take ourselves down that rabbit hole of fabrication by adding on to our ignorance rather than clearing it, recognizing it's all speculation, it's all fabrication. I do not need to imagine myself in any realm to have a human life. In fact, as soon as I do that, as soon as I start speculating about what I could be or might be or should be, I've lost my mind and I've lost my human life. Is that clear to everyone? I'm not saying we've lost our physical life. You've lost your connection to what's occurring in your life. That's what the Buddha is teaching us from ignorance. We're becoming anything. The Buddha's line in that sense is we're becoming anything other than self. Think about that line. And we're doing it to ourself out of ignorance. And the solution is so simple and so direct. But we need to keep a clear focus, and that's what this sutta is about. When recollecting, I was one with such a feeling in the past, one is only recollecting that past feeling. It's a projection, isn't it? When recollecting, I was one with such perceptions in the past, one is only recollecting perceptions. Now remember, we're talking about the five clinging aggregates. The five clinging aggregates are arising out of ignorance, so the perception itself is rooted in ignorance. When recollecting, I was one with such fabrications in the past, one is only recollecting fabrications from the past. When recollecting, I was one with such a consciousness in the past, one is only recollecting consciousness. It's also important to make a point of this. It seems like we're talking about past lives and remembrances of something that might have occurred 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. We might even get into imagining ourselves a million years ago on some distant galaxy. All of it is speculation. But so is thinking about what occurred yesterday and being stuck in thinking that what occurred yesterday must be different than it was. It can't be done, can it be? But that's the word for that, and it's a common word, is the word that Tanisara often translates is lamentation. That's regret. And we allow that regret, something that occurred in the past, that we reacted to then, conditions our mind, and we're carrying that regret into the present, and that is what's conditioning. Remember last week's talk on karma? That's what's conditioning my reaction right here and right now. Because of the reaction I had, and I'm dragging that into my present moment. So even if I can recollect in my imagination that in 300,000 years ago I had my head chopped off by the precursor to Donald Trump, it's all in my imagination, but it's certainly going to affect the way that I think, aren't I? So I need a way to recognize I've done that to myself, and I have to clear that thinking. I'm using that term clear because it came up yesterday in a conversation about deprogramming people, and it really does fit, doesn't it? Because we are going through that process of deprogramming or clearing out our consciousness of our ignorance. And again, that's what this whole sutta is about. Why is the form aggregate called form? Because it is afflicted. Form is afflicted with cold, heat, hunger, thirst, wind, sun, bugs, and reptiles. Why is the feeling aggregate called feeling? Because it feels. It feels pleasure, pain, and neither pleasure nor pain. The Buddha's talking about putting fabricated judgments on these things that are arising. Why is the perception aggregate called perception? Because it perceives. It perceives blue, yellow, red, white. Why is the fabrication aggregate called fabrication? Because it fabricates. Fabricates what? It fabricates the perception. It fabricates what is experienced as form, feelings, perceptions, and consciousness. It fabricates, let me say this correctly because it's so important, it fabricates fabrications. That's the problem. Once we fabricate one fabrication, we're down that rabbit hole of continual fabrications. And that's where we get stuck in the fabrication. But remember, that's all that it is. It's something we created out of nothing except a wrong view. That's what the word anatta means. You've established yourself in wrong view, let go of the view. You're not letting go of anything of any value, by the way. It fabricates fabrications. Why is a consciousness aggregate called consciousness? Because it cognizes. And if it cognizes based on ignorance, it can only interpret things, go through this process of form, feeling, perceptions, fabrications, and resulting in a conclusion that is now held in consciousness that is fabricated. Is that clear? That progression from any experience rooted in ignorance can only fuel that consciousness that is rooted in ignorance unless something changes that view, going from wrong view to right view. Because it cognizes. It cognizes sour, sweet, bitter, pungent, salty, and bland. Well, of course, that's what we do as human beings. Why is it such a problem? Again, because of a mind rooted in ignorance, I taste a piece of chocolate cake, and because I have lost control of my mind, I need the whole piece of chocolate cake. Or I have a pleasant conversation with a woman I've never met before, and I become enchanted with this woman, and I can't stop thinking about her. And I'm using this as an example. We all do that, don't we? We've lost our mind over something that we now desire. Remember the Loka Sutta, where we started this whole series with that. Where there's desire, there's fear. Where there's desire, there's fear. And ultimately, it's the desire for continued self-existence, self-establishment in a fabricated way that maintains a constant level of fear. And that fear is, I might be found out. I might not be able to keep this all together. It's difficult to maintain a fabricated image to the world, isn't it? Especially in our own minds. Because that's where it's challenged the most, by our own thinking.
It's also just the misunderstanding that these aggregates can be put together and have me.
Yes.
And that's...
And be me, yes.
Each and every one of us, that's the struggle, that this is not me.
Yes.
And so what am I? And you have to just bite into the concept that this is just arising and passing away.
Yep.
And...
Yep.
That's the practice. And if you do anything other than buy into it wholly and try to piece it together, you're going to have a dissatisfied experience in this.
Yep. Always. That really is touching on the idea of radical acceptance rather than approval. Because if we fall into the trap, we're getting a little bit off the subject, but not entirely. If we fall into the trap that I need to constantly approve of my Dhamma practice, we're going to lose our Dhamma practice. Because it's a practice of not approving of anything, but accepting what's occurring, including within Dhamma practice. That's why it's so important. Mm. And that's why the Buddha gave such detailed instructions, because the instructions had to be followed. One of the people I was talking to yesterday, it took a while to get back to this point, but they finally understood that it's simply a matter of following direction. But it's the most important direction we can get, because the direction takes us from a place where we're lost in our own fabricated views to reality, to seeing things as they really are. And that vehicle, again, the vehicle for maintaining that ignorance is in the Dhamma, we call it five clinging aggregates. We could have given it any other name. You know, we sometimes get caught up on nomenclature that we're not familiar with. We could have called it a Volkswagen if we wanted to. The name isn't that important. But what it defines as the Buddha's teaching here is what's important. Thank you, David. From awakened right view, this is my commentary, from awakened right view, a now supple and spacious consciousness impersonally and dispassionately recognizes differences in phenomena, free of any choice or self-reference. It's simply what's occurring. We talk about that all the time. There's nothing personal in the world at all. There can't be. Nothing is personal. Even our, and nothing is probably going to say, even our own bodies, but especially our own bodies. How can it be personal? It's in constant change. I can't hold on to it. I can only understand the vehicle that I'm using. Each and every moment, this physical form is different. Each and every moment, millions of cells are born within the body, and millions of cells slough off. That impermanence in the body is what maintains human life. But there's no self involved in it, is there? I don't have to direct one cell to do anything. In fact, I can't direct one cell. Now, we can get into brain, how brain activity affects the body, but that really has nothing to do with the Dhamma. I can't directly say, all right, I'm gonna bring some cells into existence, and there's a million that I don't need right now, so let me get rid of them. It's simply a process of being a human being, just like everything else changes. So our form is a microcosm of the physical form that is the universe. It's all the same thing, and we're simply in that process of it. Continuing with my commentary, a self-referential grasping mind will cling to and embellish ordinary differences to further ignorance and further self-establishing. You know, you've heard me say that every thought, word, and idea that occurs to a mind rooted in ignorance is a self-referential thought. We can't help but see an oak tree in a way of preference. I like oak trees. I'm not so fond on birch trees. We do those things with objects that don't deserve that type of attention, that type of personalization, because we can't own oak trees or birch trees. It doesn't matter if I like them or I don't like them. They're in the world. To even think that I need to have a preference over something like a tree or a dog or a person, look at what the belief that I need to approve of people has led to in the world. I mean, that's the whole problem in the world, isn't it? That there's people in the world that I can't approve of, and because my mind is so rooted in ignorance that because I can't approve of you, you don't belong in the world at all. I mean, that's what we do, isn't it? Because we can't approve. The Buddha realized the problem there, and he said, what I can do is accept things as they are and accept people as they present themselves to me. And in that way, I might not solve all the ills of the world, but I'll maintain a calm and peaceful mind and be an example to others on how to do it. Continue. It is the compulsive need for continual self-establishment that has resulted in doctrines of one mind, unity, consciousness, interdependence, interconnectedness, interbeing, nothingness, emptiness, non-self, and non-duality. Those are all what we've been talking about too. They're all part of this speculative, where can I establish myself? Where can I become anything other than a self? Meaning, where can I become anything other than a human being? Friends, the Buddha's words, a well-instructed Dhamma practitioner understands, I am now being afflicted by form. In the past, I was afflicted by form. If I delight in future form, I will likewise be afflicted with future form. The Buddha's laying a lie to the belief that, well, my life is suffering, so let me create an escape plan for it where my next life won't be suffering. And he's telling everyone, look at the foolishness of that. You've just lost your life in favor of some speculative future existence. Even if it's true, even if concepts like heaven or whatever hell, purgatory, Tulsita heaven, Amitabha Buddha heaven, whatever, even if those things happen to be right, they don't do anything for us right here and right now, do they? Because the belief in that takes me out of living my human life. If that was necessary, if it was necessary to believe in a future life in order to escape this life, I can't think of anything that would be more cruel to create. Can you? I mean, I'm talking about the belief in a creator God, that we would create something that can't enjoy its own life. What could be more cruel than that? But that's not what occurred. We've created the scenario that that's what occurred as an explanation for what we don't understand. Instead of simply doing what Siddhartha Gautama did when he awakened at 36, he looked out on the world and he said, the world is a flame with what? A flame with the fires of passion, the passion for continued self-existence, for continued speculative existence. That's what the Buddha awakened to, and that's what he's teaching us here, 2,600 years later. understanding, they become disenchanted with past and future forms. The key to the Dhamma. Past lives, past moments, future moments. It's all the same. What I said a moment ago, is in the past. It can lead us, it can lead our mindfulness and our concentration into what to hold in mind in this moment. Or we can be distracted because of a lack of concentration and pick up the ball of ignorance again. Again, I'm bringing that back. The Dhamma is practiced right here and right now. Past and future forms. They are now practicing the Dhamma to become disenchanted and dispassionate with present form. We're practicing it right. We're practicing the Dhamma correctly. They are now practicing the Dhamma to develop cessation from clinging to present form. Furthermore, this well-instructed Dhamma practitioner, understanding I am now being afflicted by feelings, by perceptions, by fabrications, and by consciousness. In the past, I was also afflicted by feelings, by perceptions, by fabrications, and by consciousness. If I delight in feelings, perceptions, fabrications, or consciousness, I will likewise be afflicted with future feelings, perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness. Where there's delight, there's fear. If I delight in any of these aspects of the five clinging aggregates, and delight would be a self-referential, look at what I've gotten. Look at what I am. Isn't this marvelous? When that mind is rooted in ignorance, can only lead to another stressful, distracted moment. But understanding in this moment, this is not me, this is not what I am, this is not myself. Seeing things through right view is the ultimate liberation from ignorance. And that's what the Buddha is pointing to, and that's what this structured study is about, that's what last year's Vipassana structured study was about, that's what the Truth of Happiness Dhamma study is about. It's all about bringing our minds into our body and recognizing our human life right here and right now. And in that recognition is all the meaning we could ever handle in human life, because we'll be fully alive and fully awake. Understanding, they become disenchanted with past and future feelings, past and future perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness. All that idea that I need to do something now, whether it's bowing or it's simply changing the way that I think so that I can get a reward, is a speculation. We understand that and we let it go. They are now practicing the Dhamma to become disenchanted and dispassionate with present feelings, perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness. And if we're doing anything else, we're not practicing the Dhamma. What does it mean when we recognize that? When we're trying to add to the six property person, rather than recognize we can't? We take a breath and integrate the Dhamma. And it is just that simple. That's why these reminders are here all throughout the Dhamma. Guess what? You've lost your mind again. Take a breath. And how do we know we've lost our mind? When our minds are distracted or agitated in any way. This is not me. This is not mine. This is not what I am. We become instantly dispassionate and disenchanted with the object of our desire. And fear simply falls away because we're not clinging to anything. They are now practicing the Dhamma to develop cessation from clinging to present feelings, perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness. What do you think, friends? Is form permanent or impermanent? Are feelings, perceptions, fabrications, consciousness permanent or impermanent? Great teacher, they are all impermanent. And is that which is impermanent easeful or stressful? Easeful or stressful? Excuse me. What is impermanent is always stressful, great teacher. Friends, is it fit? Let me read it again. Friends, is it fit to self-identify with what is impermanent and stressful, always subject to change and uncertainty as this is me, this is mine, this is what I am? Great teacher, it is not fitting to self-identify with what is impermanent and stressful and always subject to change and uncertainty. Friends, it is known by the wise that any form whatsoever, that is past, present, or future, any form that is internal or external, any form that is obvious or subtle, any form that is common or sublime, any form near or far, should always be seen through right view. The Buddha is going through every type of speculative self-establishment. near or far, past, future, this realm, that realm. When seen through right view, as this is not me, this is not mine, this is not what I am. That's the Buddha's directive. Anytime we find ourselves stuck in our imagination or clinging to an idea of what I could be, remind ourselves, this is not me, this is not what I am, this is not myself. Furthermore, any feelings, perceptions, fabrications, or consciousness whatsoever, past, present, or future, internal or external, obvious or subtle, common or sublime, near or far, should always be seen through right view as this is not me, this is not mine, this is not what I am. This, friends, is called a Dhamma practitioner who diminishes rather than embellishes. Diminishes what? Diminishes ignorance rather than embellishing ignorance. Who abandons rather than clings, who discards rather than acquires. Who scatters and does not pile up. Pile up what? Pile up new ideas, one on top of another, about what I need to be or what I can be or what I should be. We don't pile it up. We don't create an identity over these fabricated ideas. The wise Dhamma practitioner diminishes form, feeling, perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness rather than embellish these aggregates. The wise Dhamma practitioner abandons form, feelings, perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness rather than cling to these aggregates. The wise Dhamma practitioner discards form, feelings, perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness rather than acquire these aggregates. And again, how do we do that moment by moment? This is not me, this is not mine, this is not what I am. It is a direct way of first recognizing where we're clinging and simply releasing it. The Buddha describes awakening using that term, released. Released from clinging to all fabrications rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. But it's not a conceptual release. It's a direct release that we do ourselves moment by moment as Dhamma practitioners. In other words, it's not some magical catharsis that we're awarded after many, many years of right Dhamma practice. It's a moment by moment catharsis that we can recognize with a well concentrated mind and the framework of the Eightfold Path. We actually observe what's occurring. The Buddha continues, the wise Dhamma practitioner disentangles from form, feelings, perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness rather than pile up the aggregates. Understanding impermanence with regards to these aggregates, the well-instructed Dhamma practitioner grows disenchanted with form, disenchanted with feeling, disenchanted with perceptions, and they grow disenchanted with consciousness. Disenchanted, they become dispassionate. With dispassion established, there is release from clinging to wrong views, ignorant of Four Noble Truths. Release, they know they are released. That's why I constantly am asking you to recognize the benefits of your Dhamma practice. We know when it's bringing us benefit, and we know when we've released ignorance. They know when they are released. They know that birth has ended, meaning giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance has ended. A life well integrated with the heartwood is always the Eightfold Path, has been fulfilled, the task is complete. They know that there will be no further entanglements with the world. This, friends, is a Dhamma practitioner who neither diminishes nor embellishes form, feeling, perceptions. Just to make a comment there, diminishing the form is a constant feeling of inadequacy. That's what the Buddha is referring to. And we talk a lot about that here, that one of the common human problems is that feeling of inadequacy or self-loathing that manifests in grasping after adding something to this inadequate self. So it's pretty clear that the Buddha understood that idea even 2,600 years ago. And he explains it in such clear detail. This friend is a Dhamma practitioner who neither diminishes nor embellishes form, feeling, perceptions, fabrications, or consciousness, but who is now established in the Dhamma, having abandoned identifying with these aggregates. This friend is a Dhamma practitioner who neither clings nor abandons form, feeling, perceptions, fabrications, or consciousness, but who is established in the Dhamma, having abandoned these aggregates. This, friends, is a Dhamma practitioner who neither acquires nor discards form, feeling, perceptions, fabrications, or consciousness, but who is established in the Dhamma, having discarded all these aggregates. This, friends, is a Dhamma practitioner who neither piles up nor scatters form, feelings, perceptions, fabrications, or consciousness, but who is now established in the Dhamma, having scattered these aggregates. Friends, I declare it is from diminishing, abandoning, discarding, and scattering these aggregates that one is established in the Dhamma. I'm going to read it again. Friends, I declare it is from diminishing, abandoning, discarding, and scattering these aggregates that one is established in the Dhamma, a wise Dhamma practitioner, free of affliction. Friends, one who has released their mind from all wrong views is never afflicted again by speculation. This one is established in right view. That last line is a good place to end this, isn't it? Establishing right view, because that's what we're after. That's what we're hoping to develop. Excuse me. That's what we're hoping to develop in this moment. And so it takes a Dhamma practice that can bring us into this moment and keep us here. A wonderful sutta, I think. And let's go to Mary. Mary, how are you this morning?
Good morning, John.
Good morning,
everyone. This is a good one. This is a tough one, right? The five cooking aggregates is certainly easier said than done when it comes to discarding, abandoning, leaving behind, you know, everything that you just said. But, you know, it still comes back to when you're present now, that is, and when you're concentrated, and when you're practicing, that is the act of abandoning, severing, leaving behind of the five clinging aggregates. So something to just keep working on and recognizing when you're distracted, coming back to the breath, and then right effort and sticking with your practice. This is a tough one and one that takes practice. So thank you, John, for your words, and it's good to be with everyone tonight.
Good to see you, Mary. Can I ask you a question? I know
yes.
I can. You've heard the five clinging aggregates over and over again for at least 5 years, maybe six. They now have some meaning to you, though. It's not just a bunch of words. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They have some meaning.
And you understand them as your personal experience of stress and suffering.
Yeah, and the structure of our world. You know, we're led to believe that these are real things to seek after, and to we can recognize that by actively pursuing the five clinging aggregates, which I think in some ways we're led to believe that, that's the definition of becoming, right?
Yep.
Becoming what?
Yep.
Becoming more. So,
exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you. Sorry for the quiz. Anthony, how are you this morning?
Did you call my name, John?
I did.
Oh, okay.
How are things in sunny Miami?
Hello, everyone. Happy Saturday.
How's Debbie? Please say hello to her.
Pick out my favorite line from this, because it's worth repeating to me. It's speculative self-establishment in the past or to the future will only continue distraction from the singular establishment of right mindfulness in life as life occurs.
That is brilliant. Who wrote that?
I did not see quotes on that, John, so I think that's an original Haspel line.
there's a new phrase. It's a Haspel line.
And the reason I love that line so much is because I tend to look at the five aggregates as just as life as we experience life. And I think when you spend too much time going into the past, it can lead to depression because you either want something to be better than it was or you want it to happen again. And when you spend a lot of time in the future, I think it creates a lot of anxiety because you worry about all the things that can go wrong. And as I sit here, it's hard to make a checkmate argument against being present because I'm just sitting here enjoying myself in the communion of like-minded spirits. Like, what could be so bad about that? And you can pretty much say that for almost every moment you're in, because if you're just sitting there experiencing life as it happens, it's neither good or bad or indifferent. Yeah. It's just the experience of life, and it tends to. You can't even argue against it because even if something is painful, you just need to accept that that is the experience I'm having right now. And when you can do that, it tends to expand on itself and become a spiritual practice in and of itself, where you just can enjoy it more.
Yeah.
You know, that's the practice. So I love this teaching, and I thank you for it.
Thank you, Annie. Thanks for joining. Please say hello to Debbie. How are things in Miami?
Right now, very rainy. We've been having a lot of rain, and it's interesting because it's a different kind of rain. You see it coming, it's like a blanket, and it just takes over, and it's very heavy. And we're going to have that all week. And I actually love it.
It's I always like the rain. So the other thing is, I noticed that hat you're on. I'll send you a Yankees hat so you can get rid of that one. got a Mets hat. Good to see you, my friend. Good morning, Karen. Oh, wait a minute. You're still muted.
There I am.
There you go.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for being here.
Good to see you.
You know, it's things are becoming a little bit clearer each time I attend. So I'm grateful for that. But, you know, it's still a bunch of words to me. Over time, I'm sure I'll catch up with you guys. And thanks so much for everybody's feedback and wisdom. I really appreciate it. That's all I have.
We appreciate you joining us. Are you starting to see these things called the five clinging aggregates as your personal experience of suffering?
Yes.
Good.
Absolutely.
That's such an important understanding to develop. So good for you. And
thank you.
Have a wonderful day, Karen. Have you heard from the Thane? Sorry to get into a personal discussion.
No, I have not. I'm surprised I haven't seen him on here, but maybe I'll reach out to him today.
I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to send him an email. So, thanks, Karen. Go to Ram. Ram, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to see the Buddha taking something as common then and now, as speculating about previous past lives.
Yeah. Well, remember, that was the common teaching in the Vedas and the Upanishads.
Look at life now and still see it's still, one way or the other, it's still something that we do.
Yeah.
Very, very strongly. And he brings it back down to, it's what's happening right now and right here in the present moment that is important. Everything else is speculative in that last line. We'll never be afflicted by speculation again.
Yep.
This is what the Dharma is about.
And that's just another way of saying a calm and peaceful mind, isn't it?
It's a calm and peaceful mind.
There's nothing, when you look at it from right view, there is nothing extraordinary about awakening. Mm-hmm. What's extraordinary is maintaining ignorance, isn't it?
Right.
You know, it takes tremendous effort to keep it going, and most people go through that effort, maintain that effort their whole lives.
And he points also back at the the third noble truth, cessation of suffering is possible.
Yeah.
And if you speculate about previous past lives, you're not really taking that third noble truth very seriously.
No, and also when you think about it cumulatively, any time I spend in speculation about self-establishment, I literally have lost my mind. But I've also lost that portion of a meaningful life because I'm simply not present for it. We even have a phrase for it that is usually wrongly applied: "I'm stuck in my head."
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm stuck in my head because of being stuck in my head. There's not a big mystery about how I did it. I did it to myself. I can get myself out of it. Thank you, Ron. Julia, I'm going to go to you next.
Okay. Hello, John.
Keep you on your toes. I always make you the last one. So.
I have to just speak in part two. I was just looking at this this one line from the Buddha where it says, "It is from personalizing ordinary and impermanent phenomena that one joins with suffering." To me, that line is very, that's the meaning of the aggregates join with the suffering.
Yep.
And I think about how easy it is to do that.
Yeah.
Because true. It's like I'm hot, I'm cold, it's a lot of things. I'm putting on a mask because I'm afraid that I'm gonna get sick or whatever.
Yeah.
So all this kind of things are all personalizing our experience of form and everything that we're made up of, and it's difficult to catch you yourself and undo it.
It is. Yeah. It takes a well-concentrated mind and the right framework, the refined mind.
Exactly. And then the other line I was going to point out that I really liked was the answer. It says it should always be seen through right view. This is not me. This is not mine. This is not who I am. So it's kind of like you have to almost like going through the day, when you have one of those experiences, you can just take the breath and, like Mary said, repeat that to yourself so that you can affirm that that's what...
Yeah.
Detach yourself from that. It's difficult, though.
Yeah, it is, but that's why there's right effort, in the framework of the Eightfold Path to keep us going, keep us well focused.
Thank you,
Julia. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, John. Good morning, everybody. I'm just going to go with noble silence tonight. Thank you.
Glad you're here. Thank you. Tim, how are you this morning?
Good morning. Hello, everybody. When reading this, this particular sutta, I just had this impression of a little clarity of how introspectively the Dhamma is practiced for me.
Mm.
And when things, it's like a river flowing, and the river is like time. And if you allow, if it's allowed to absorb the Dhamma as it truly should be practiced, everything is flowing. When it's interrupted, you're jostling, moving about, going under crests and diving down, kind of like if you took a fish that looks graceful in the water swimming, if you took that fish out of the water and put it on land, it would flop around.
That's a great metaphor. Man.
It would flop around. And when we're not practicing the Dhamma, we're flopping around. I'm flopping around. And that brings me to the point of you mentioned just today about, I don't want to call it nature, but what I mean nature is how human beings are to be living. By practicing the Dhamma, that's how we live a human life. When we don't live that human life, we suffer through these aggregates. Filtrated. And there's so many great points in here, and of course the one, you also mentioned something about fear, about being found out. And I can't help but think that, we tend to perceive things at the conscious level, at the moment of us recognizing that we're here. But the human brain absorbs everything that we experience through our lives, and it's stored.
Yeah.
And that's subconscious. And the ability to recognize when those things are creating a reaction, an emotion, a feeling, a story that we tell ourselves, that Mary had mentioned last week. The Dhamma, practicing the Dhamma through jhana meditation concentration allows me to recognize when I am being afflicted by past lives that are affecting my present moment in agitation.
Yep.
And I'm saying a lot, but I'm trying to articulate it. And this sutta it's very analytical in how the Buddha explains that process. And when I realize that my life isn't just my conscious mind, it's all the things that have been piled on in a heap. If they need to be, I'm going to say they were reconciled again. When they're reconciled at that moment in contact, I can be released.
Yep.
And that's why this was a great sutta for me, because it brought back that thing. And one last thing. In conclusion to all that, that's that disenchantment. of being disenchanted with all that, leading to dispassion, and having that release, and then stopping that feedback loop, becoming right back to mental fabrications and formations. So thank you very much for the teaching. This is exactly what I needed to kind of tie in what I've been thinking about this week with the
Thank you, Tim. That was a great perspective. You know, it was very, very helpful to see that. And another word for subconscious within the Dhamma would be conditioned mind, because that's what we're doing. And all those things that we don't even recognize are imprinting our brain. If done with that brain slash mind that's rooted in ignorance, that's what the brain slash mind is going to develop, is that view of ignorance. And so that's when we talk about reconciliation is recognizing the subconscious conditioned mind that keeps recreating what we call karma, keeps creating that reaction rooted in that subconscious. And the Buddha figured out a way, this is, you know, talking about it in this way, the Buddha figured out a way to recognize what our subconscious mind is driving us to do. And he did that by recognizing that we need concentration and a framework to see what our subconscious or conditioned mind is doing to us, rather than just simply following it because it's what I think. And that might sound like a rather intricate way of saying something that is simply what's occurring right here and right now. That's all it is, and how I'm feeling about it. So. Thank you, Tim. David, good morning.
Good morning, John. I've been thinking about when our new teachers did their first teaching, and I thought of what our friend Jen said. And it was such a good instruction. And she said, don't conduct your practice in a rote manner. Don't conduct your practice in a rote manner, in this almost robotic, I'm gonna sit again, I'm gonna go to class. Okay. Engage in it and concentrate and put that, you know, what you're learning and what you're developing in a serious manner each and every time. And I think about that often. And I'm just a big fan of this, the new teachers, because I don't know if I would have heard that necessarily from you, because she's a teacher. And I always knew she'd be good at this because she's a teacher, so thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, David, yeah. Might as well hear from Jen now.
I was actually thinking about the directive of scattering, because it's something that we as a Sangha, scattering isn't something that we often use in our vernacular of discussing the Dhamma. We talk about dispassion and reconciling and recognizing and abandoning, but we don't so much talk about scattering. And I think it was I had a conversation with some Sangha members about that word scattering and how and kind of what that really means when you're applying these teachings. How do you scatter the five aggregates? And so scattering to me is the opposite of clinging. So if you're scattering, you're creating space between yourself, your true self, and the not self.
Yeah.
And how do you do that? You stop adding to the present moment.
Stop piling up.
Yeah, stop gathering and adding to what's occurring. The only way to do that is to prevent or remove any arising that is not me. So,
yeah.
Scattering, that word scattering really helps me kind of deepen.
Thank you, teacher. That is the word scatter. It is the opposite of clinging, and it also shows the value we should be placing on what we're letting go of, which is no value at all. Just get rid of it.
Right.
You know, don't consider it. Don't worry about where you're dumping it. Just scatter it. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jen. Hello, Becky.
Good morning.
It's good to
good
see
morning,
you.
Everyone. So nice to be here. Well, I'm going to read the line that hit me in this sutta, and I think this is also your Haskell line. I'm not sure. A mind rooted in ignorance will compulsively ignore anything that challenges its ignorance.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the one that hit me. When we find that our mind is drawn back to something that happened in our past, we can recognize it as, this is not me, this is not mine. Yeah, but that's very hard. And especially if it was something that we have told ourselves, we have fabricated, had a very big traumatic impact on us, which is all I'm making. Am I right?
Yeah.
It's all I'm making.
Yeah.
So to be able to succeed in scattering that or in letting go of it, the only thing we can do at that moment is bring ourselves back to our breath and bring ourselves back to the present moment. And take a deep breath and realize what we were doing, recognize it.
Yeah.
Once we get to the point where we have succeeded to a degree in that, and I guess this is my question, we won't stop thinking about our past, we won't stop remembering things that happened to us, but we will be able to do that with dispassion and without taking it personally and without making a story about it. Is that all true?
that's another great teaching, teacher. it's all true. Yeah. Thank you, Becky. That was wonderful. It really is, you've heard me say this a few times, it's remarkable the amount of Dhamma that is present in Cross River Meditation Center. And, it, you know, I'll accept some of the blame for that, for being your teacher, but you need to take a lot of the blame. Don't be so cute about it. Take the responsibility. Like the Buddha's pointing out in the sutta, we're awakening because of our own right efforts. We're very fortunate that we still have a teaching that is useful all these years later. But when you think about it, why wouldn't it be? You know, why wouldn't it be? It's such a remarkable, useful teaching, and we're all developing it. Another, I remember years ago, there was a few people that were coming back then, and you remember one of them, they stopped coming because they didn't like the discussion. They just want to hear, in fact, they didn't really like the talks too much. But, to me, what we do after my talk is at least as important as the sutta itself. Because we are talking about how we're applying this. And that is the difference. That in the Anapanasati Sutta, you remember that sutta where the Buddha holds up the 26 or 27 awakened monks, they were only monks then, as examples of Dhamma practice. That's what he's describing, is actual actual human beings that are actually developing the Dhamma themselves. There's no magic there. And we're doing it. We're doing it on every class. You're doing it every time you sit in your cushions. And we're all reaping the benefits of developing calm and peaceful mind. I was talking to someone yesterday who said, I'm so happy that I took... He came to the Dhamma about a year ago, I think. And he said, I couldn't imagine going through this last 5 months or 6 months without the measure of calm that he's developed. And I couldn't either.
And then you have other people that say, oh, I can't practice the Dhamma. It's just too crazy.
Yeah, a good, not surprising number of people, but noticeable, just could not keep up their practice with what was going on. And I mean, that was one of the first thoughts I had when this whole thing began. I wonder who's going to be able to maintain it, because it's whenever there's any that type of big change in the external world, it just sucks up our attention. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to say, okay, let me just sit quietly for a few minutes and let it all go, because it constantly, David's got the right idea. It's been over a year since you looked at the news. That is one of the best things to do for mental health, I would say.
Sure.
You know?
And social media.
It really is.
Well, it's in permanence in the forefront.
Yep.
This thing that the life that we knew in December is gone.
Yep.
And now we have a new life, a new way of living, and it's just a lesson in impermanence.
Yeah. We've gotten so far. I remember the argument began with the emergence of the internet and the use of it, that now you could just put anything up there, claim it's the truth, and it is. And so that's what's going on. And then it's just exploded with the idea of things like Facebook and Twitter, et cetera. And that's just what's occurring. People are saying anything they want. But the exaggeration of the emergence of ignorance is just that. It's still ignorance. I hope I made the point, because I know I talked probably more about this than I should have the last 6 months. But it's that we don't need to lose our minds over these kind of things that happen. And they're ordinary, even though this is an extraordinary disease, infection that's spreading around the planet. It's ordinary in the sense that it's simply part of human life. And we don't need to lose our minds over things that are ordinary. Why would we? And we're doing it here. We're developing that common, peaceful mind within human life. We haven't left humanity, have we, at all? In fact, I would say we're all more deeply engaged in our moment-by-moment life than we ever were before, and that's why we're noticing a developing common peace. So there's two classes today. All right, that's enough. That's enough for today. We'll finish with the Metta Sutta, as we always do. So again, find your relaxed meditative posture. Gently close your eyes. Gently close your mouth. And just become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let one be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class this morning. Peace.
Thanks, John.
See
you, everyone.
Take care, Mary. Take care, Anthony.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.